November 13th, board time.
All right, we're going to go ahead and start board time. We don't really have anything under old business because there were no carryovers from it. So we'll go ahead and jump into, unless actually you had something on old business that you were adding. Okay. Then on commissioner reports, the only item that we had written down, and then whatever the commissioners have, was next steps on advisory votes. Axel Ransom has numbers, I think.
Well, I got a few numbers. What I printed up for you was just a breakdown of our six advisory votes, just for your reference, if you want to talk in, you know, just talk in terms of how we should pursue any of them.
How did Tom's end up? And I say Tom's. How did the West Side end up? I know it was really close.
Yeah, it was. It was.
Because everything else was pretty clear.
Ooh, that was close.
West Side 49.94% yes, 50.06.
How many votes?
You're talking 100 votes.
So that one's not, because we still haven't certified, and they're still taking in a few. I don't know that they're taking in enough that it would switch 100.
At this point, there are about 900 more ballots that they need to resolve.
And this is a countywide, so in theory it could shift 100.
So we can hold off on that one.
Yeah, and that's what, yeah.
The other ones are not likely to switch.
No, not on any of them. Not on any of them. So, and there were, and so with, okay. So on four, well, on five of them, one of them has a resolution that we would hold off on. There are four resolutions attached to the advisory votes, and then there's one that would implicate a code change. So it's different processes for each. So the question, you know, that we have is, you know, do we want to start just setting up, do we want to have one hearing for kind of advisory votes and then start a process of code change, or how do we want to move forward with this? That was kind of just my open question.
Sure. What are you talking about?
What, the code change one?
Yeah.
Fireworks. Because that's the only one we actually have
for what?
Authority to change code.
Oh my goodness, that reverse.
All counts.
Yeah, nice try. Nice try.
Well, the bottom line on this is that we said we were going to do this if the citizens say, and we said we weren't going to do that if the citizens don't say. So
right.
it becomes an automatic process for us to be able to do what we said we were going to do.
Yeah. Now it's just more about scheduling and how. Yeah, agreed. And so now it becomes about scheduling and process of like.
Were there resolutions attached to the bridge? The bridge questions.
So yeah. The yes vote.
Okay.
No, the yes, they vote, the yes was change it. The yes vote on the fireworks was change it to a shorter timeline.
I think it was 3 days.
Now,
we're not gonna phone call from farming.
On the fireworks one, I did do some preliminary numbers because
fireworks lobbyist out of Olympia.
Oh wow!
Now on the fireworks one, there was this question about which precincts voted because the whole county got to vote on these. So there is this question about, well, Vancouver already has more restrictive firework rules, so should we look at the precincts different? You know, did it? The question is, did it only pass because right. citizens who already have these rules voted mm-hmm. in favor of it? So I did some digging in the precincts. I think we still have some work to do, but we have about 230 precincts in Clark County, and about only 30 of them voted against it. So almost every precinct, regardless of rural or urban, voted in favor of limiting the fireworks. However, I think we should look a little deeper into exactly which precincts those were so you know and have that information.
To make sure you have a majority in the unincorporated areas.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I'm certain we do, just based on the 30 to 200, but we should look.
I'm surprised you went that way.
I was surprised. I figured it'd be a 50-50 proposition, but ended up being a strong majority. Hmm. But anyway, and agreeing with Axel on that as far as the... I agree. Just I looked all through all the precincts and saw the same thing because I was wondering, like, okay, was it just
county?
Well, yeah, and all but 30 apparently voted for it. But it would be good, and what I had said to others is, it'd be good to know what was the number in unincorporated Clark County, and be able to provide the information to Camas, Washougal, Battleground, Yakko, Ridgefield, and Le Centre, all of them. Say, here's what the numbers were in your jurisdiction as well.
Actually, here's something that would be very helpful. And it is, in fact, I talked with Bob Poole of GIS. He says it's a fairly simple thing for them to actually show a GIS map that shows here's the county and here's a color code overlay over the county that shows the turnout for each of the ballot measures.
That shows how they voted and stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, so cool. You can actually... It'll
would be
love visualizations.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So,
put him on my campaign crew.
Seriously, yeah. Man. That's awesome.
Although, this would be something that our auditor, Greg Kimsey, would have to buy into it. Right. But I would encourage him to do that because the auditor's office does a great job. They already list all the precincts. And who voted for which in each of the precincts. They to some degree, on some precincts that overlap some boundaries, there's just a few voters in there, so they kind of combine those. So they don't really want to publish that until it's certified or near-certified, which is when?
It's usually 3 weeks after the election is when we I think it's 3 weeks.
On the 20th.
Okay. I would suggest, let's set things up so that we can get that map out ahead of time, if possible. Encourage our auditor to support that, and just let that be a standard practice. And we would encourage them to do that, so that we just basically present the community on countywide measures.
That'd be cool. I like that.
Did you say that all precincts voted to restrict
it? All but 30.
So
out of the 430,
you're talking about the
there's 200. There's about the I think, and this was my first blush look. There's about 230 precincts in Clark County.
Actually,
I think about
228.
Yeah. I'm rounding, and I think about 30 or 29 voted.
The unincorporated area did favor restricting it.
Yes. I think it is a safe.
But if there's 230 precincts, there's 230 precincts in the county. There must be
there's
more
a
than 30 rural.
There's a ton of precincts in the unincorporated urban area of Vancouver alone. There are a ton of precincts within there.
So we need to look at it.
So what we can do, we can check with the schedule and see if Greg Kimsey is good for that, to present that information. And then we can schedule, and that would be after they're certified, and give our GIS office a little time to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can schedule a time to consider all of the six resolutions, and at that point bring them all forward and say, this is the way the advisory vote went, and so we should embrace it, or we should embrace it, or adopt it, not about adopt it.
So I like that. So we have so we would set a schedule kind of moving forward that, I like that. Did you, Axel, does that make sense as far as what we would do, kind of how we would, the schedule of events of how we would do that?
Actually, except for the sixth one, because that takes a little more. Right?
Well, yeah, the sixth one, a code change would, I believe, would take more than passing a resolution.
For fireworks, we want to light up a map and make a policy determination whether we need to do a county code.
For all of them, we would be asking elections to give us the data, give us the analysis, and work with Bob Poole and GIS to light up the map for all of the advisory votes. And then we would set up a process using that information and the maps and the visualization. We would set up a process, first of all, to deal with all five of the advisory votes that have a resolution, attached.
Mm-hmm.
And then on a parallel path, figure out what are the steps necessary for a code change associated with the sixth advisory vote, the one on fireworks.
So if it was tongue-in-cheek, this advisory vote means something.
I agree.
And we have an opportunity to say, this one does make a difference.
I said that, actually. I said that on my
own. For the color code, I would think that, we'll let them decide what makes sense, but I would think that green would be yes on something in varying degrees, and red would be most degree of... In other words, they would scatter it so that you don't just say yes or no, but you see kind of...
I'll bring the color swatches up.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll let you
I'm sure they'll sort it out.
I assume that it would be the same, but I don't know.
Okay.
I'm sure they'll figure out a good mix.
More detailed mapped information and then a schedule for adoption of the resolutions and amending the code. We can do that.
Thank you, sir. All right, cool. So that's covered on that. And all right, things from commissions.
I had an informal lunch today with the large majority of the Veterans Relief Fund Board, And Samantha was there.
Oh,
and
okay.
It has just been brought to our attention that we assumed that Home Services Committee was going to extend their service officer agreement. And we just got notified by them, and I think maybe because we dropped the ball, that they want a whole lot more. They want a new computer and some other money and so on. And their contract runs out December 31st. Mm-hmm. So I suggested that we prepare to go to RFP with the same RFP that we did a year ago, same contract that we did a year ago, and just by suggestion at this time. And we send it out for bid to see if there's others interested. Some of the guys were concerned.
What did they say about that? I mean, what was their opinion?
They were concerned we didn't have time and wanted to know if we could extend the time with Home Services. What's the C stand for? HSC.
Oh,
Human Services Council.
Human Services Council.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
And we thought maybe with us not paying attention, that they have taken advantage of it, and that they may not extend it, or the extension would include those increases in computers that they want, and so on. So I guess we need to get a hold of our community services here, Human Services, and. I asked Samantha to go see if she could get an official email or whatever from HSC so we know what we can do. But I think that nobody expressed any interest in doing anything different. The bad thing is the Veterans Relief Group won't have a meeting until December the 11th.
Okay. So we need to find out what exactly is going on with HSC and that contract and if they do have issues with it.
Mm-hmm. And the potential for putting it out, and
well,
you have
yeah,
to know sooner rather than later if they're not meeting until the 11th.
Yeah, it has to go before the Veterans Relief Fund group.
Yeah.
Then it comes back to here. I thought we'd just turn around and send it out right away, but we shouldn't do that until the Veterans Relief Fund group looks at it.
Yeah.
Now,
well,
my other question is maybe they don't have to look at it, because we authorize and bless it anyway. And we're in a situation here that maybe we should get legal opinion.
It's because we're in the middle of biennium. It's odd that their contract is ending December 31st. I'll just dig up more information on it.
Yeah.
It seems to me it would run through next year.
Hold on.
Yeah, rather than wait for their December meeting, if they know that this is a timely issue, they could call a special meeting to consider it earlier. Would they invite them to?
Or if we could take action on it and then have them bless it with an executive board or something like that so that we could put it out there for bid for at least 3 weeks to respond.
So we would do everything we can and say, yes, you already have our blessing. If you bless it, then it's good to go.
Yeah. Now before, we've had in the past anywhere from 2 to 6 people or groups apply for it. This year, the Veterans Assistance Center is interested in bidding on it. They're already there. It's really amazing because HSC didn't have to pay rent at all. Where before, the people that had it, Columbia River Mental Health, paid for an office over in their health building.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, HSC got a big bump by not having to pay rent. So I was a little surprised to hear this. So we just need bunch of information. And the other thing, WASAC.
Next week.
Today, I think, is the last day to put our name in.
Oh, yes.
On the vacated spot, and that was with the what board?
Well, there's a bunch of them. The one that I'm not reapplying for is with the Public Works Board.
Public Works Board.
Yeah, that I've done for 6 years.
And one of the things
you
said is that there appears to be no money on there at this time.
No, it's been rated by the legislature. Rated. Pete was actually on the Public Works Board with me early on.
Oh, hi, Pete. So my question is, if they've raided the fund, should we be concerned to have one of us on there?
We should definitely be concerned about it. And what I talked to Tom about is it's not a position that sits with Clark County. It's western counties, so west of the mountains, have one position on the state's public works board that's appointed by the governor. The county association sends three names to the governor's office. The governor chooses between those three names of county commissioners, elected officials, county council, county commissioners from the west side. There's also a county engineer position from the west side, which is what Pete built for Cornwall.
Same process.
The organization, sends a few names, then the governor appoints. So, and there, that's the same process as with quite a few of the, mm-hmm. and we got a list of them. Did you see the list that we got from WASAC on that?
I didn't look at it.
I resent it to you.
I delegated that.
So there is a list that there are deadlines coming up, though, and we talked briefly. There's a list of boards and commissions where there is a county seat, and it'll either be a western county, an eastern county seat, or it'll be any county elected official seat. And that list, Public Works Board is a great board to be on. It has been, because there were hundreds of millions of dollars of capital resources going toward infrastructure projects, water, sewer, stormwater, bridges, roads, great stuff. We've utilized it, and it's a low-interest loan program, 0.5% loans that jurisdictions get for these projects. It's been rated twice now in the past 3 years, and this time it was rated not just for this biennium, but for three biennia going forward. They rated all new funds, and the only funds that will be there to actually fund infrastructure will be the repayments of loans coming back, which is the beauty of this whole program, is that it pays for itself. It's like one of the only things, but the legislature sees dollar signs, and they took it.
Maybe this year we shouldn't worry about that position. Were there any other positions that...
Is that the TIB program?
No, but is that? I don't know if there's an opening on that. That would be a really... TIB is actually one that does have money and is still doing great projects. And I don't know if there's an opening on... I didn't look at the list. I'm sorry.
I have to go back and look. But I think today could be the cutoff for some of them or all of them. When we go back, before we go home today, we'll
check it out.
Cool. Yeah. So if there's any we're interested in,
today's the day
to look at it. So.
The last thing I want to bring up is that civility. I want to make sure that we practice civility, not only between us three, but that we do the same. We've been real lackadaisical in our hearings. This last hearing we did pretty good. We really clamped down on the people giving testimonies good. And I think even when they take us to task, they could agree to disagree with us or say that, you made a mistake by voting for this. We like to hear their opinion, but they don't have to call me a farmer or something like that. And that's what I'm talking about. The difference between issue and picking it personal. And we need to practice that amongst ourselves, too.
What I'm going to look for is guidance from you guys on that, as far as, something that, a rule that I can enforce as chair, and that ultimately that you'll be able to enforce, and that that we're all on the same page with. Because, and I told Commissioner Mielke this, I'm like, sometimes I feel like I'm stuck in the middle here because I've got guy on my left saying you can keep people civil, and I've got you on the right saying say whatever you want, let it fly, and it makes it hard to manage the flow, and manage public comment on that. So it would be very helpful, I know for me, to have something we can agree upon as far as kind of the rules of the road for public comment.
Bothering me with that lady that testified, and she said, I watched it on TV. I've never been here before. And I watched you on TV, and how unprofessional it looked. I mean, even though that we're sitting there, we're not arguing back and forth. We tried to answer all those questions. I think we could still do that. We could still communicate back and forth, and maybe it's just something that we could explain to why we did something, if we want to do that, maybe. But I think that when it becomes a personal insult, they've impugned the person.
Right.
I don't have to be called an airhead. I can be saying, you know, I really screwed up on my vote, and that's the issue.
Right. Well, and I got a call, and I haven't listened to it yet, from Jack Davis, and then we got an email from Jim Kenney, and they're pushing back.
Two of the biggest defenders we
have. And that's why they're pushing back.
People testing.
Exactly, and that's why they're pushing back, is they want to test the limits of it. And push back on there being limits. Mm-hmm. So that's why I, and I'm happy to, work with that and try to figure something out, but I just want to know that we're all on the same page with that, because I don't want to say, hey, okay, here are the rules of the road, and then have a fellow commissioner say, no, man, I'm all about it, bring it on, say whatever you want, and then it makes it hard to, to administer.
I forgot which one it was, but they started... talking about more than just one employee, start talking about two employees.
Yeah.
And I think that's a place they don't go. They could talk about department. They could talk. We're the ones accountable. If we're not holding someone accountable, they should tell us that we're not holding them accountable.
When we were all on the same page with that, with don't bring our employees into it.
Yeah.
And that one we've been pretty consistent on, and I feel like, all right, we've got. Mm-hmm. We've got that one. If somebody does it, I feel real confident and comfortable saying, okay, we don't do that. It's when people are coming after us that is yeah. That's something
and
that you
and that's
talk
between
about.
Us too. When we have our conversation between each of us, that I don't turn to you and say, you did this or you should have done that. I think we need to stay on the issue. Say, Mr. Chair, I know you disagree with me on this issue.
Right.
And that's... But for me to ask you why you voted that way or whatever, that's not in line, I don't think. Because... And then we also heard... We heard probably more so at C-TRAN. And they said, well, you're doing that just because of politics. And I think that we've done a real good job being professional. And we can just be better. Because we keep drifting farther and farther. And the Jack Davises and Jim Kenney's, they keep going farther and farther. They keep pushing that limit. And at some point, they said, no, you guys have been really pushing it. We've been really lax the days ago, and now's the time to clamp down.
Certainly, I think we're all on the same page when it comes to the employees, the staff here, because they're not accountable to the public. And so it's not appropriate for them to be attacked and for us to not just simply allow that. I don't think that's appropriate. When it comes to citizens coming and basically saying demonizing or whatever negative words they could say toward their elected representatives, that us, the being that free speech and First Amendment rights in America are best demonstrated when
it's not First Amendment right.
Well, here's what I'm thinking that if you look at the big picture,
mm-hmm.
in the countries in the world where freedom has been attenuated, it's those countries, what are the marks of that? It's when you don't speak ill of those that have a power and have authority over you. And those countries in the world that have the most freedom are those that there's no fear for citizens to speak ill of their elected representatives. I'm very tuned into the Russian community, the Slavic community, and still the background that many of them carry with them from their world, they still find it hard to believe that citizens can speak ill of those in authority. They really, some of them still feel like they fear mm-hmm. that there is going to be retribution back to them. And how do we find that balance?
Let me explain why. This is our meeting, and you have all the rights in the world to walk out in the front door and scream at the top of your lungs that I'm an airhead. But to come up here during the time that we're supposed to be talking about issues. That's what we're here for, to inform the people and discuss issues and hear from the people on the issues. That's what we're here for. We're not here to be bad-mouthed. They could bad-mouth me in the paper, letters to the editor, stand out in front of them and talk all they want. But this isn't a meeting for them. This is a meeting for the general public to hear what their commissioners are doing.
Well, the I see it, it's, I know we can think of it as our meeting. In a way, it is our meeting. But I think of it, this is really the citizens' meetings. The servant leadership that we demonstrate.
Why do we cut them off in 3 minutes or 5 minutes?
Well, there has to be some kind of order.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, too.
So there are limits and there are boundaries on it. I think certainly citizens will push and some will step over a line that we have feel like that's not appropriate for them to say. When it comes to them speaking of us, but I feel like as elected representatives, that's one of the prices that we pay, that we're willing to pay, to allow citizens to have the freedom of speech to speak ill of us. And certainly we demonstrate respect and honor for the positions that we hold for each other. But when it comes to citizens speaking ill of us, I think it's important that we allow them.
So you're telling me I have that same First Amendment right to speak back ill of them?
No, we must model.
I'm at the same standard they are.
Well, we're responsible for what we say, but we're not responsible for what they say. That's where freedom of speech.
Are you going to allow profanity?
No, I think there's because there are established standards for that.
It's also protecting free speech,
and that's not an issue.
You can't have it both ways or halfway.
I mean, I cussed and they put it in the paper, which was horrifying.
They did that? That was terrible, too.
Horrifying. But nevertheless, it's protected free speech. So that is a limit that we would
face. There are reasonable limits. And so really when it comes to, we're not talking about profanity. We're not talking about them speaking ill of employees. We're talking about what freedom do they have to speak ill of their representatives. And I, for one, feel like that's where freedom of speech is best demonstrated in America, is when the citizens don't fear and they're not censored from speaking ill of their representatives.
So they're putting you up there on a whipping block.
To a certain extent. So I happen to know, that on your, pseudo public Facebook page, you demand good manners. True?
I uphold the standard, and yes, when people are attacking others as my guest,
right.
I feel like that's a setting where it normally develops a pattern and degrades really quick.
And that's why I'm walking us along that. The degradation of the civility of discourse, where you demand on your page, and it's not just with other people, it's with you as well, that you have said to people, you either show good manners or I'm going to kick you off of here. I've seen it. And that is a limit, that is a kind of a boundary that you've said of, hey, we're going to have a reasonable discourse here. We're going to have a conversation, and I don't want others to feel either intimidated or feel like this conversation is degraded into something that's not worth even participating in. So the question is how might we translate that into something that gets to where Commissioner Mielke is wanting to go, but still doesn't infringe upon people's right to call us to task? Because absolutely we sign up for that, to be called to task. I agree with that. I guess I'm trying to find some way to bridge the gap.
Yeah,
here.
And the Facebook page is not a public setting where the freedom of speech is modeled in America. Freedom, you set your own standards of decency when it comes to your own, what guests you invite into your home,
right.
And what guests will either contribute or detract from a meaningful conversation when it comes to conversing in public. This the Facebook page, each one of ours, that belongs to us. And yes, we're talking about public, and I made mine public, but we set the standards on that.
In cyberspace, it belongs to everybody.
Well, actually, I don't claim it. We are the receivers of the generosity of Facebook. They don't owe us that. They give us that. It's a privilege. It's not a right. It is.
Thank you, Mark Zuckerberg.
They don't charge us for it. They give it to us for free. They don't owe it to us. So that's a gift. When it comes to the public meetings here at the dais, I guess we call it, right? That is the model. That's the epitome of public discourse where freedom of speech is to be maximized. And that's why I believe it's important that we allow, we steer clear from censorship as much as possible. Allow them to speak and let them speak ill of their representatives. It's okay with me.
It's a tough line because you talk about modeling public discourse from the dais, and it does, and that's what the woman who came up was saying,
was
that the model of public discourse had been degraded, and I get that. I mean, it's a tough line. That's why I'm asking. You know, that's why I'm glad we're talking about this, because we do set limits and we have boundaries on the public discourse, on the model for public discourse. We set time limits. Don't allow swearing. Don't talk about employees. Those are all limitations that we're placing on free speech.
We don't
shout
out.
Right. I mean, so we have limitations, and the joy of the First Amendment is it allows you the freedom of speech in whatever you want to say, but it does not allow you the right to say it wherever you want. You can, as a business owner, as a place of congregation, you can create boundaries to what is discussed. And the question is, what are those boundaries, and when are you infringing upon it? And I guess the one piece, just to dig in, is the one piece that we're not quite there on is what's it okay? You know, where's the line with regards to us?
Well, first of all, I don't feel like it's not right for me to say what you are to be subjected to. So each one of us can set our own standards when it comes to what we will feel like, oh, no, that's not appropriate. And I will defend your rights to be able to be to give you a second vote if that's what you feel is appropriate. I will support that. But I would feel like with me, you don't need to defend me. Let people say whatever they want about me. It's okay.
So that would be an interesting way of. It's going to be a little harder to administer. because then what? So somebody comes up there and they says, you two guys, Tom and Steve, you're both farmers, airheads, whatever. I mean, farmers. I don't know why you came up with farmers, Matt. I know, seriously.
Farmers
so,
are good.
Exactly.
Farmers.
So they say, Steve and Tom, you're airheads. So I got to figure out, okay, well, it's okay that you say it about me, but it's not okay that you say it about Commissioner Milky. And you see what I'm saying? I mean, it becomes harder to administer if someone comes up and is speaking ill, and not just speaking ill, but like, casting aspersion, getting personal about more than one of the commissioners. How am I supposed to deal with that? I'm supposed to say, hey, don't you bring Commissioner Milky into this. It's okay. Keep flying. Go ahead and say whatever you want about this guy over here.
Yeah, that's how it actually...
How do you think that's going to play for me, man? I mean,
and practical,
I'd be like, I knew it, you hate him.
You can all sound your own alarm. It's okay.
Because I've gotten beat up for letting you get beat up.
Yeah.
People have come to me and said, you need to stop that. You need to stop those people from coming after him. I know why you're doing it. You want them to do that. I'm like, he said, let it fly.
Well, tell you what, if there's ever in question, a situation in question, I'll speak up and say, I respect your free speech. Carry on. But when it comes to me being the recipient of it, okay, when you feel like they're attacking you and it's not...
Audience is offended by it for us.
Well, you don't have to be offended for me. I'm okay. I'm not offended.
But the meeting is for everybody.
Right.
And if they're offended, if they come here to be offended, they're going to feel like they don't want to be here.
Well, I support your reputation and those that if you feel like this is not appropriate, you always have my second vote to say, you know, I respect there's a balance here. There has to be a call somewhere, mm-hmm. and you called it, so I'll support you.
So a real life thing, though. I mean, and I raise it. So real life, you know, you're the chair, and somebody comes up, and they're saying, and I'm kind of where you are as far as, like, you know, people come up, call me names. I worry about the degradation of the conversation, and that people will just stop coming because they're, like, just sickened by it, and they just don't want to even. And it diminishes the office and diminishes the representation that they have and their view of the people who are supposed to be representing them. That said, so you're the chair. Somebody comes up, says, Tom and Steve are airheads, and you know that Tom's already said, nobody, you know, I am not okay with people just,
you know, Tom's not an airhead.
Yeah, you know Tom's not an airhead, and he's not okay with it, but that I am. How do you deal with that? With that person that comes up and says it, what do you do?
I respect
the
standard that Tom has set and say, I'm sorry, but that's not acceptable.
No, the board standard. It should be a board standard.
See what I'm saying? Because it's his standard, but I'm okay with it. So you've just upheld his standard, but you've gone against mine if you're telling them to stop saying it. See my problem if I'm trying to administer this?
Well, the outcome is that the freedom of speech is always a freedom of speech unless one of the objectors say, you know, that's not acceptable. And if one of you say that's not acceptable, mm-hmm. then okay, we're all in agreement that we uphold that standard.
I think obvious when someone comes up there to intentionally impugn you. To intentionally degrade you. I could see someone getting excited, you know, and letting a word slip or something like that. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking to someone that has the intent of coming up there to belittle or impugn or embarrass somebody else that is there to be...
And we've had meetings where that has occurred this year on both, where you guys and I have both taken those slings and arrows, mm-hmm. or slings and arrows, yeah. It rattles the audience. It rattles the people who are trying to testify on a more issue based, using a more issue based approach, and those who are prone to want to make those personal attacks are emboldened by it, and they come up and they get even more animated and aggressive. And we've seen it, and I cast no stone. This is not either side of the aisle that I speak to. This is just, it's a mob mentality that once you get, you get group behavior and individual behavior. Individuals generally behave very, very well, but group behavior, you can be more anonymous within a group. You're just part of a group dynamic, and if others are doing it, then I can be even more aggressive with it, and it builds on itself. I do worry about that. That goes beyond freedom of speech and starts getting into intimidation of others who might want to come up and testify, but are like, well, I'm not part of that group, and I don't want to get yelled at or booed or I worry about that. And maybe I'm worrying, for no reason. But I have seen hearings kind of go that way this year already. And I've seen it not just this year; it's been more than that. But
so I understand that you agree with. You'll go with the agreement of the board that we hold the same standard for all board members.
Well,
they can still come up and disagree with you. They can still come up.
Of course.
And that's our intent. But I don't mean to intimidate or embarrass someone watching on TV like that lady was. She was quite appalled. In fact, when they got up there and started doing it again, she got up and left because she was offended by it. And we don't want people to be offended to the point that they don't want to stay and be a part of it. And remember, we've had a lot of kudos up here of our openness already and our willingness to discuss, mm-hmm. and welcome people. And that's what it's all about.
Have a two-way conversation, which is all that's good stuff.
Yeah, we really bent the rule that direction, and it's been a positive thing because we've had a handle on it.
Well, certainly I will support the board for unity and for a common message and for just simply decency. But I would ask, let's be really careful to make sure that, mm-hmm. people have the freedom to disagree as adamantly as they want. And when it comes to personal attacks or attacking the messenger's reputation or their character, that's just pointed out really clearly. So that it has to do with issues, has to do with the actions that we've taken. And when it comes to people attacking just simply us as people, then we point that out.
In fact, that one lady I was discussing didn't have an issue. She proceeded, I think she was attacking you. Didn't bring up one issue, and it's all about bad luck.
Not everybody knows how to express or what to do. They just know the alarm's going off in their head, and and somehow we have to be sensitive to that.
Yes, totally agree. So, and being sensitive to any concerns about infringement upon personal freedoms and First Amendment rights, what I would suggest, what I will do as chair is talk with legal as well and make sure that, tell them what we're talking about.
That's always a good idea.
And just make sure that nothing that we're talking about is an inappropriate infringement of people's First Amendment freedoms. Is that fair?
That's always a good idea to get clarity there, because just understand that freedom of speech is fundamental. And this is the best forum, the best setting where that really ought to play out. And as much as we can maximize it, the better that we're upholding that our Constitution.
If you don't get a handle on it, you're going to have someone in the back of the room with a pan pounding on it with a stick. Right. And they're making
it's the clapping thing,
it's a statement of freedom of speech.
Clapping becomes booing becomes
jeering.
Well,
actually, early on, we had one or two meetings where there was a lot of people in there that felt very emotional about issues.
We got
we allowed them to express clapping and cheering and all kinds of good things, but not to do anything that's going to be hissing and booing and all that kind of thing that would be negative and would be embarrassing to people, because it's hard for people some of those people to come up to the microphone. It's a scary thing for some people.
Yes,
and
very.
When they feel like they're rejected by the crowd, that's not good for them. Mm-hmm. So I think it would be good to allow clapping, to allow applause, to expressions that are positive and reassuring, but those things that would cause somebody to shrink away from the microphone and feel like I want to run out of the room, those situations we're defending the right of that person to be there defending their reputation.
Yeah, you recall that many occasions we have young scouts here.
Yeah.
And if this had gone on with the scouts here,
okay,
it wouldn't have been a very good
So here's what the standard
government.
Will be: we'll have imagine that there's always a little Girl Scout there with a Girl Scout cookies, and she's always listening. And if her little ears are going to be offended because of the nastiness in the room, then we'll say, "Wait a minute, you're offending the Girl Scout here."
The Girl Scout standard, I like it.
That's right.
And we're
going to
be
okay,
it's a good way of thinking.
We should
about
keep
it.
Some of those Girl Scout cookies.
Seriously.
Handy anyway.
That's all I have. All right, cool. Commissioner?
I'm good.
I just want a brief update. On Thursday and Friday, I was at a legal seminar on growth management and land use. Amazing information, basically updates on the law and where it's going and some of the work group stuff that's going on. A couple of things I'll mention now, and I'll talk about more as it goes along.
Where were we at?
It was in Seattle. It's put on by Law Seminars International, and they do legal seminars all around the state. And this was a two-day seminar specifically focused on growth management and land use. And so there were, we had an update on the Department of Ecology Working Group on SEPA rule changes, which was the first thing that I'd mention. The SEPA rule change was to allow for categorical exemptions to SEPA checklists for projects, basically making it easier, you know, giving more flexibility to have fewer projects that have to go through the State Environmental Policy Act and through the whole checklist. The problem that's happening with it is the work group that is interpreting it and creating the rules for it are actually making it more difficult. They've taken what should have been a simplification, and they've actually created. They've said, fine, these are exempt, but you have to do a checklist to figure out if you're exempt from the checklist. So they're actually literally creating another layer. There's a lot of legal work going on that the development community, and I have to follow up with BIA and others, that they're doing to fight this and to say, no. The legislature was very clear to create this exemption and to create, you know, more projects that can get through without having to do this added work. But it's something that we should definitely follow up with, not only with the building industry, but also with legislators, because they're the ones who created the legislation to exempt it, and now you send it to the agency, and the agency in their rulemaking is now making it more difficult.
There's been, I know Don Benton was saying that the rulemaking by these agencies should always come back to the legislature for ratification or modification.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That would be so much better. I would think that we would, in the WASAC, that we would promote that.
We do.
We do. In fact, they tried to do legislation.
Almost every year.
Well, okay.
Yeah,
well,
almost got a hearing.
Yeah. Yes, this is definitely something that WASAC supports and that we have supported and that our legislators have supported. It tends to be that, first of all, the executive branch, the governor, since the governor's in charge of those agencies, says, no, I won't allow that. And secondly, that the legislators themselves, if they're in the majority, say, well, no, why would I want that? You know, why would I want that to come back? You know, send it to the agency and let them do their work. Because they know that the agency will be more stringent than they can do within the legislation itself.
Comes down to accountability, right?
Fair enough. But unfortunately for us, most of those legislators are accountable to citizens in the Puget Sound who agree with that perspective. So that's our problem with the legislature, with that in a nutshell, really. But there were lots of them, everything from climate change issues and regional transportation planning and how that's getting wrapped in, how they're now requiring more climate change acknowledgement, not only acknowledgement, but planning associated with regional transportation plans of how to address global climate change. You can't just say, well, I have this other plan and that's doing it. You're actually literally starting to have to create checklists, even though there are no standards at the local level that can be enforced. All of them are at the state level. So there's a lot going on with that and the unenforceability of it associated with the fact that it's global climate change. So there was case law, they talked about that, and how that's problematic.
Problematic is a good word for it.
Yeah, I know. So the other one I wanted to mention that I just thought was really a great, it was a good presentation, but a really good slide. Puget Sound Partnership did a presentation on the morning of the second day. And Puget Sound Partnership is just an agency that was created to do exactly what it sounds like, is to restore the Puget Sound. The problem is they also became a bucket for money, and they're getting a lot of it. And they spend it all in the Puget Sound, and their criteria, like in the Public Works Board, Public Works projects now have a little tag on them to say, well, is it part of the Puget Sound Partnership plan?
Oh, and are we then they get an extra point. One now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again,
a
whole bunch of legislators in Puget Sound and not so many down here. And so they add all of those to it. But the good piece of it that I thought was really interesting is they started talking about what we do as public agencies, and they as an agency, and what they're trying to focus on. And they said, they had this great slide, and it's really small, but they basically say, the decision making of the public has, there's the early adopters here, let's see, early adopters, the early majority, the late majority, and the laggards, right, as far as kind of any marketing campaign that you do for products or otherwise. And all the work we do on information and education is focused on the early adopters. It's people who, if you just told them
what the problem was. They're going to change the behavior. And they were talking about it from a clean water perspective. Mm-hmm. But they were saying, you know, you just do a little bit of education on, say, stormwater, for example, and they're going to change their behavior. And then you have the laggards that no matter what you tell them, they're going to tell you to go pound sand. And that's why you have regulations. And we spend an inordinate amount of time as public agencies on the ends of the spectrum. We spend it on information and education and outreach, and we spend it on regulatory structure. But we don't address the vast majority of our citizens who are either in the early majority or the late majority, who they're not going to be moved by information and education alone. You got to actually do a little more than that. And they're also not going to have to, you're not going to have to hit them with a stick before they do it. But you need to do better social marketing. You need to actually get to them and market it. They used an example, and the example that they used was they used the example of giving people a coupon for getting rid of yard debris. And they said, you know, there's the education of it saying, well, you know, you shouldn't just like, you know, for your leaves, you shouldn't just blow them into the street because it causes problems and it clogs up the gutters. And you shouldn't regulate it on the other end of it and say, I'm going to come and fine you if I see you blowing things in the street. So you can't just do the education in that. They did a marketing approach and said, here's a $10 coupon, or here's a free coupon to take your yard, you know, these leaves to one of these five sites. And they used marketing and out, you know, they're actually going to them with something to give them an incentive to do it. And what they showed was a huge increase in the number of people that actually used it and that went and took their leaves to these places where you're supposed to dump them, as opposed to just blowing them in the street. But so it was just a really interesting, for me, a really interesting conversation about how we really do spend a lot of time kind of on the ends of the spectrum of, like, let's just give them a pamphlet and say, here's the problem, and, you know, maybe you should think about doing it differently. And or we say, we're going to hit you with a stick if you do it, because we're regulating you out of this. But we don't spend a lot of time doing what you're really good at, which is kind of marketing, you know, marketing solutions for it. And it just hit me as something that we could work on, you know, to actually be better at doing things that, you know, the 21st century way versus the 19th or 20th century way. You know what I'm saying?
I do. You recall that book, Citizenville?
Yeah, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That rewards and allows people to step forward and actually enjoy the process, get rewarded, get visibility, inspire, all of those good things.
Okay.
Did you ever get a copy of that book?
I did not. Now I'm going to write it down.
Yeah, Citizenville. It's a spinoff from Farmville, which a lot of people really get into on online
news.
That's
true. Cool. So, anyway, that was
helpful,
just
that middle gap.
Yeah, and that's the whole right now, is like that vast majority of people who you can't just educate them into it, and you don't need to regulate them into it. Just there's something in between, the incentivizing.
The reward. You know, it's funny. I watch wimp.com, which is a video.
What?
WIMP. Wimp.com.
Wimp.com.
Five videos every day they put out. The one that they put out yesterday had to do with inspiring people to exercise. So they have subways in Russia. Mm-hmm. So what they did is they set up these vending machines, and they have a little pad, and so they have to do 30 squats in order to get a free ticket. Out there doing squats, and they're all getting in good shape now.
That's amazing. Wimp.com, huh?
Yeah,
right, I got to check it out.
WIMP.com. Another good one is TED.com, the educational.
You and your
video.
Online stuff, very cool. All right, that's all I have. That's all I have. Good stuff. All right.
Well, thanks for the update.
Pete is here.
No problem. There's more, but yeah, there was a lot more, but we'll go into that as it comes up. There was a ton of great information, though, and I got to completely geek out on land use and growth management stuff, which I love. So it was wonderful from that standpoint.
Yeah, that's the term of the day, geek out.
Yeah. All right, Pete, you're up.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. We have been making some incredible progress on the parks transition, and
that's
I'm
good.
Actually pretty excited about
like the sound of that.
Where we're headed.
Good.
I'm going to ask, though, in doing that, for But good. I'm going to ask for some variations to the structure that was approved by the board previously as to how we would accomplish this. And what I've got a draft structure, but essentially what you had approved previously was the addition of four people, one of them being a project employee for 1 year. What I would ask you to consider, and I'll walk through this, is the total of four people and not having the one as a project employee and then one reclassification. And what we're thinking about is that in this organizational structure, we would combine, we would have a whole park section within Public Works with a manager that would oversee the operations piece, the admin piece that we previously been buying from the City of Vancouver, and the maintenance program. So it would be all-encompassing, consolidated group. We would, and what I would recommend is that we open it up, but we reclass the park superintendent position to a program manager 3, which is actually lower than what was previously recommended. And then right now, most of the work that we have been doing has been by Bill Bjerke, who's our park superintendent, and he has been doing great work. And we would open it up, but I would recommend that we open it up just internally. If there's some other candidates, open it to them. But I really think that Bill Bjerke would be, I know he would apply, but he would be a great person in this particular position, and it would be a promotional opportunity and so forth. It would probably be a bump of about $10,000 on his annual salary. So that's one suggestion. And then you had authorized two program coordinator 2 positions, and actually and we had talked previously about a lateral transfer from the City of Vancouver, and we have two individuals over there that we have to give them an offer letter, so they haven't accepted, but they have expressed significant interest. They could hit the ground running, and one of them is the first box is, or the first box on the left side below the manager is the operations side, and that's the person that manages reservations, special use permits, the lifeguard program, the park ambassador program, coordinating with maintenance activities, and all of the customer service activity work that is in that element of it. The second program coordinator 1 position would be more of a property side, where would be responsible for the capital repair program, managing our residential and agricultural leases, overseeing any property acquisition, liaison with the Parks Foundation for the memorial benches and plaques, preparing grant applications, and then everyone's pretty much responsible for customer service. The next program coordinator 1 position is our existing volunteer coordinator, and it's at the same job classification, and she would be doing the same duties she's doing today, but she would also be integrated in as part of this team and helping out in other areas as needed, and again providing customer service.
She's outstanding.
She's
great wonderful. Work.
And then the office assistant 3 position, which had been approved, and this person would be responsible for office management, the park impact fee program management, all of the financial reporting, support for reservations, support for the volunteer program, because of the days that Karen's not in, it's nice to still have somebody answering the phones and helping and assisting with people, and then overall customer service. The parks manager would be responsible for overall parks supervision, budget development, capital improvements, the comp plan work, and the advisory commission. And this side, the left-hand side, the admin and operations side, would really be five people working together. So it's a small, close-knit group that would support each other in all aspects of this in order to, you know, basically roll your sleeves up and do whatever needs to be done. As a result of the parks manager taking on these additional responsibilities, I'm recommending the addition of a program manager one position that would provide the primary oversight of all of the crew chiefs and the maintenance workers on the maintenance side, but also someone that needs to be able to help out wherever help is needed. And in approaching it in this fashion, we actually saved $20,000 the first year over what was previously approved. But in the second year and ongoing, it's about $67,000 more than what was previously approved. But that puts us at about $440,000 compared to $880,000, which was what was our current budget. And so, and I told you before, I didn't think the three people were going to work. This is a significant cost savings, and you know, proof will be in the pudding, but I think this could work. The other thing that we are doing to help with implementing this, and that we have a demonstration tomorrow, we're looking at some software vendors. And what I'm finding out, not having been involved in a lot of the parks reservation software, a lot of the major companies and a lot of the city and county parks departments and even state parks are using software that's hosted off-site. And so what we end up doing is we would pay them a setup fee, and so that our specific reservations could be plugged in. And if you've ever made a reservation, as an example, at a state park, you go to the state's website, you go to the reservation sections, you make your reservations, you get what you want, you get confirmation back. The state isn't doing that. It's hosted by another company off-site, and we still would have a license on-site so that if somebody walks up, we can service them, we can take care of them, but we could get something like that up and running much quicker, mm-hmm. because they already have the systems in place for the credit card or debit card purchases. Mm-hmm. They have, you know, they're doing this for a lot of communities, and so they got the systems in place. You know, you talked about, Commissioner Mador had talked about wanting to have a system that could be, you know, extremely user-friendly and pretty much handled, automated is almost, you know, extensively. And I think we can do that. We still want to work with them so that if somebody's renting a shelter for a wedding, they probably need a little more support than somebody that's renting a shelter for a family reunion. So we still have part of our operations person is working with those people to make sure we're giving people what they need. But they can handle the transaction online. It won't take a lot of our resources, and I think this might be a good way to go.
But I spoke to Mark, and I know you worked with Mark, but Mark was very supportive of the model, too.
We heard the same.
I think you hit a home run, Pete. Look, sounds great.
Thank you.
Full green light for me.
Yeah,
I think we're building another bureaucracy. we originally thought we might be able to do this with two. That was way back when.
No.
Yeah, we did. Way back when. We thought we were going to do it with two.
1936.
And then, then we thought we were going to do it with three, and then we agreed to hire four. Now we're going to make a new position, a higher manager position. And one of the things I see in here also is that I think part of it is already being done. So are these all park positions, or are any of these already existing?
Well, yeah, you got to remember two of these at least are already existing.
This parks manager position, the way I have it structured, is an existing position that just gets reclassified.
Bill, that's Bill.
That's Bill.
Position.
This position is existing.
That's Karen.
That's Karen Llewellyn. And then all of these positions in here that are doing the maintenance are existing. Yeah. So we're talking about four positions. And so the only difference from what you previously approved was three with a project employee, and so it's essentially converting the project employee to a regular employee, and then it's some classification differences.
So, again, the parks manager position is $10,000 more, and what's that title?
Right now?
For Bill
his current title is park superintendent, because he just has the right-hand side of the box. So it's providing a reclass for the additional responsibilities.
Over here we have property acquisition and in charge of leases.
Yeah.
I thought we had, is that always in your department?
Yeah, in fact,
So this is existing work you already do, but you've hired another.
Particular work is actually that property position is work that a gentleman named Jeremy Knuth works and through the city of Vancouver, and this is basically his current job description. He works almost exclusively for the county now, and I think he's willing to transfer over and continue doing those duties.
We have something like this, our conservation futures.
That's through Environmental Services, right. And we do have funding for
land
acquisition.
Pat Lee.
But he doesn't. So. He just does Con Futures lands, which are significant in and of themselves. The Parks and Rec folks, the former Vancouver Clark Parks, had a specific person that did all of these things for parks properties. Well, so there's tons of them.
So my concern is that we have a lot of property out there that's leased. You have managed residential and agricultural leases.
Mm-hmm.
Those were some of the things that we were wanting to take a look at to see if they were going to be considered as excess property.
And that would be the position. That'd be the person.
He'd still
that
be
would
responsible
help
for
that.
Doing that.
That yeah. person would help us with mm-hmm. all of that on all of those parks properties that have that situation.
So. You put Pat Lee in this department then?
No.
I don't want us drifting out that we worked so hard to bring in.
Agreed.
And that's what I'm concerned with. At one time we had a whole bunch of people managing all the different land, and we got it back down to 12 people managing all the land, and now we're going to add one.
No.
To manage
it's
land.
Already, Parks already, Parks Department does this work for us now. So we would simply be taking the person that used to work for the combined parks department and does this work for us for parks and having them work for us.
What's the connection to parks for managing residential leases? Why wouldn't that go back down to
Pat? Part of
Go ahead.
A big part of that work is that we have even, and just as an update, Chris Horn is bringing that resolution forward to combine the PIFs. But historically, we have acquisition PIFs that we still have an obligation to either refund to the people who gave it to us or acquire that property. So we've mm-hmm. got to continue be managing that program, acquiring property when it's appropriate with those monies, and in having done that, we have an awful lot of parks land that has not been developed. So some of them are agricultural in nature, so we have agricultural leases. Some of them have acreage with a house on them, and so we're renting those houses out so that they're taking care of the property.
But they're parks lands. That's why they're parks lands.
Yeah, but it goes back. They were bought with Conservation Future.
No, they weren't bought with park impact fees. Some were. I'm not saying that some weren't.
And what we've done,
but the park person doesn't deal with those.
After we buy them with this department over here, when we get ready to develop them, we just scoot them over to the parks. And
no, I don't think that's what they're suggesting at all. I understand the concern.
And that's what I'm saying. I think there's some duplication that we're doing that now. I don't think parks should be managing farms or residential leases.
And
I would see if it's parks, you know.
But what if it's land that was purchased by parks for parks with park impact fees? Currently, there's a house on it, and somebody's living there, and we don't have the money to develop it yet. So we can either let the weeds grow, you know, to the ceiling, or we can say, hey, guy, stay living there, just keep the weeds down for us for a while until we can build the park. But know that you are renting from us. Which should we do?
We're in the habit of an ongoing program of buying property because it has riparian areas on it. And because the guy won't sell it individually, so what we've done in the past, we go in and we bought the farm. I know three cases. We bought the farm, then we rent the farm back out to the farmer, and just to acquire the riparian area. That should go back on the market.
And those tend to be the con futures purchases. Those are not the parks purchases, generally speaking.
Well, they become parks.
They can't.
Well, we're gonna have a work session. That we'll get to have this whole conversation. Well, We've been working on land acquisition.
I think we can move forward in this direction, but I think we need to go back and review what we're doing with property.
We're having that work session.
That's totally fair.
We still haven't got that list of properties.
I've got one.
All right. Yeah, it's a great heads up. Go ahead, sorry.
Two things related to this. I assume you've put a lot into this. We're getting all of our parks taken care of very well for half the cost of what we were budgeting before. There's one thing we haven't heard of for a while, and that is the flexibility of our PIFs.
He mentioned he said Chris Horn is writing and bringing it to us.
End of the year going to be done?
Yeah.
Okay,
you have to separate that.
And we've met with the city, and we've broken out the separation of city money and county money.
That's a big job.
We're making great progress.
Okay. So good.
All right. So that's in process. We want to make sure that we get her done.
Absolutely.
Okay. The other is the Clark County Parks Advisory Commission.
Yes.
And I assume are you heading that up? Are you doing something to invite citizens to form and...
Yeah, and one of the things that I wanted to do was include the work session that we have scheduled for December 4th to bring forward some recommendations, get some feedback from the board. Certainly the county appointees to the Parks and Recreation Advisory Commission are very interested, or several of them are very interested in continuing, and you've appointed them. So, you know, I think that's a good start. I'd like to, right now, the combined Parks and Recreation Advisory Commission consumes a considerable amount of time, and so we want to scope it such that we don't have all of these very formal staff reports and minutes and all of that.
Yeah.
We just want to get their feedback as to how we're doing our work and how we're progressing, and use them as a resource and not necessarily a resource drain.
Yes, I agree, because the way that the PRAC has worked has been very expensive, very formal, and I think consistent with all of our advisory commissions, all of the volunteer citizens that are advising the commissioners, would be make sure they got one of these recorders, make sure they have their grid, make sure they can keep their documents, and that we're not investing a lot of staff time to do it. It's meant to be a volunteer-led group of individuals where they don't really have a budget where they're going to be spending money.
So you're not suggesting that the volunteers would populate the, you know, like do the IT work and populate the grid themselves and like put the stuff, put the audios online or anything, right?
No, but they would record rather than, and they would say here's the recording, and then somebody, I would think that somebody here would be serving all of the citizen-led committees to have a system and have their own grid, and yep, here's mine, and with, and Parks just being one of those. That way we have commonality, shared resources, and all, and we're not adding cost and speciality in each one of these things.
That makes sense. I just was getting clarity. And so long as we are still providing the staff support they need to be successful, because that's something we've talked about, is really asking them,
right?
You know, like, what do you need of staff to be successful, and so that it's not staff-driven, but that it's volunteer-driven as to what they need to be successful.
Yes.
And we might want to meet fairly regularly as we're forming. But right now, you know, we're not building any projects, and they meet once a month, and that seems just overabundant. You know, look at the frequency and you know, make them a good resource, but not a drain.
And being that if we're going to have individuals who have been used to this budget and used to these spending this money and used to doing it the expensive way, and we're just inheriting those individuals, we might also, the natural tendency is we're going
to
inherit all those expensive processes as well, and we don't want to do that. So in this work session that's coming up, I would assume that we're going to open it up to the community, and there's no guarantee that if you served in over there that you're an automatic shoe in here. We open it up to the community. It's a competitive process, and nobody has an automatic freebie.
And that's the direction I'm going to be looking for from the board.
Great.
Is how we want to do that.
Good.
So, and then the thing I didn't mention.
So before you leave that, I agree that it should be open, much as we do every other appointment. But much as we do with every other appointment, those who have committed the time to get up to speed on the issues surrounding whatever it is that they're on the advisory board for, there is value in that. There's value, and there is value they have spent. In all of the time they have put in that to get that knowledge, that I would hope we would respect as well, because there are great people that we have that have been serving the county for free on this board, and I wouldn't want to discount the value that they bring with the experience they've gained.
And I fully agree. And there's two answers to that. One is that they are free to continue on the existing board that they're at. And I assume that that board still continues and it serves the city of Vancouver.
No.
The city will get rid of all of the county representatives. Yeah.
These are people we appointed, the county, as county representatives for county parks. Right.
Live in the county.
Okay. Yeah.
No, not necessarily.
Not necessarily. There was one, Flossie. Right. Florence was in the city, but was a county representative. But anyway.
Kelly's our representative.
Well, I would assume that anybody that would be sitting would be at least in Clark County, not necessarily unincorporated.
Sure.
And that would be enough for them to qualify. But that when everybody applies on an equal basis and they say, here's also my background, and by the way, I've got all this experience and I have these years of service in this other capacity, then we would consider that as we walk through every one of these candidate evaluations. We'll compare that to everybody else who's applied. But what we don't want to do is to send an automatic message that if you serve there, you're automatic shoe-in. And said, no, you apply like everybody else, and by the way, you're probably going to look really good if you show all that experience.
That's like running a campaign all over because you changed procedures.
Yeah.
Well, we'll certainly discuss that more on the 4th.
Okay.
The one other thing that I didn't mention, just to be clear, is the parks manager would report to me and be a member of our senior management team in Public Works. So.
Cool.
However you want to run that, Pete.
Yeah,
that's your department.
Your show. Just to throw a wrench in your works, man. This is more for the board, and I'd forgotten to mention it. I realized that I created a conflict for myself. The state conservation districts are meeting on December 4th, and Eric Johnson, our executive director for WASAC, had asked, and the conservation districts had asked that a commissioner come and speak to them about the
struggles that we go through in adopting local levies to support conservation districts, the overlapping services, the value we see in their work, but the limited nature of our ability to raise taxes on individuals and fees associated with that work, and the need for the state to come up with, if you want to support these programs, to come up with a reliable and consistent funding mechanism to support them instead of asking us to take over for it. The conservation district guy was there in Seattle, and then Johnson called me as well and said, "Hey, we need you at that meeting." I was like, "Okay, sure. We've had a lot of experience dealing with conservation districts. I'm happy to come." It's on the 4th, so I don't know what to do about that. As far as the parks, I mean, I trust you guys to conduct the work session without me. I'm fine with you guys doing the work session without me.
I think it could probably be just an informative. Bring up to date type.
A lot of it will be information about like what is the process and how are we moving forward and you know what's our plan and all that. I mean, and yeah. I'm 100% comfortable with you guys doing it. I just don't want to leave you guys in the lurch and have it be something that people are like, well, Stuart didn't show up because I didn't want to.
Attacked by your God.
and it was a shared meeting with the Parks Foundation as well, so they're going to be giving their annual report to the board, and then
I will call Sherry directly.
And we will be updating you on where we're at.
Right.
And based on this helped me. I'm going to be moving forward full speed. Mm-hmm. Probably, you know, I'm just probably going to want further refinement on the Parks Commission so that we can get that underway as well. Because mm-hmm. probably need an advisory group as we are doing all this forming work.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't know if that was going to help or hinder, so I didn't bring it up.
Yeah.
I don't know either.
On the email I sent out a week ago, I said, I'm not sure if we're ahead of it or behind it. Go talk to Pete.
Yeah.
Well, and I appreciate your work on all this. I mean, like I said, Commissioner Madore was saying, this is a home run, man. You're doing great work.
Thank you. I will, just so that we can make the necessary job offers and so forth, I'll be following up right away with a staff report.
Cool.
Great. Thank you, Pete.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, I got a do-over. You brought something up.
Oh, now blame it on me. All right. Go ahead.
You brought something up
thanks, Pete.
Having to do with possible levy.
Mm-hmm. Veterans levy?
There was a change in the veterans law. Mm-hmm. Came into effect in July. They want to know where their money is. I said, give me a break. This is this year. They'll probably be on property tax next year.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard anything.
You will have, it's my belief, and I'll confirm it with Bob, but you all will have the option of changing that levy amount when it comes to you through the budget process.
What it is, it's mandated minimum.
Oh. Well, I thought we were above
mandated
the
minimum by the state.
They changed the minimum, I'm told.
Okay.
We were before they didn't have a minimum, they had a maximum.
Yeah.
And we were about halfway up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now they have a minimum.
So the minimum is higher than
and
it is now.
The minimum is higher.
Well, we'll check and see if the minimum's over what we're.
So do we get that
levying now
from the assessor or
from? We'll get it from Bob.
Okay. Well. If the state mandates it, there's no choice to make.
Right.
You just
yeah,
complying.
From below it. Yeah. So we'll find out about that.
Remind us again where we are and what the new minimum is.
Exactly. Yeah. And Axel, so, all right, other staff reports. Axel, and then Axel, start off with transportation. While you were gone, we talked about the list of projects that has been floating around, whether it be business community or otherwise. You heard it in the work session again today. We have a tight turn on making the case with regards to a transportation funding package. I saw that Senator Benton, I say Senator Benton because you know that's the guy I want money from. So he's Senator. He's not Don when we're asking him for money from the legislature. But he said he would help as far as a one pager. Really getting the case made for us. Is that something then that you're going to be meeting with the team tomorrow morning on?
So we already forwarded the latest version of the 179th one-pager to Senator Benton's office because he said they're in conversations right now.
Okay.
But as far as what's going to happen with the rest of this week and next week, I'll do whatever you guys want me to. I've got a preliminary kind of draft loose list together. It certainly has our projects on it, and then some of the other ones we know about through correspondence with the chamber and CRADC mainly. I mean, just to be honest, haven't put a lot of effort into calling directly to the port in Vancouver and other places. But, I mean, do you want us to coordinate the effort to get this thing that's signed off by all, I don't know who's, you know, are we looking for city manager's signatures? Are we looking for elected official signatures? What are we looking for?
Work group this morning, and Kelly Sills is is there, and I think that we'll probably be looking at a list longer than what they want.
Mm-hmm.
But we probably want to prioritize.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
on that list.
The county and the city's five priorities, or do we throw in the ports as well?
I don't think it's our job or role to coordinate and prioritize other people's projects, but it's our job to prioritize our project.
Yeah. And I know we've done that.
And so it's a matter of getting as much buy-in and making the best case that we possibly can for 179th and 10th specifically. The other projects are important, and I imagine we would be supportive, like, you know, 502-503 intersection interchange improvements, SR-14 at between 164th and 205. I mean, those kinds of things, I'm sure we'd be supportive.
The new ones that came up this morning were more economic development, like the Barberton. We talked about that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Improvement. Cutting those roads through.
I don't think I don't think you're going to get state money for those, because the state money we might get is for rail improvement, but that road system's ours. You know, it's a local system.
Yeah.
You know, we need big dollars, state system dollars. Because there's a local cut.
There is. I got package. That number here.
Yeah, there's a local cut that we would get, and it's like the carrot they're trying to throw at us. It's not much, but it's more than we get now.
I'm trying to think of which of those projects over on 205 were already funded, and I don't remember
how many. The 18th Street one is, but the SR-14 at between 164th and 205 is not funded.
And then there's a flyover on 72nd north of Costco off of 205.
On 205 or on 72nd?
So you could go north on 205 without going through Patton.
Oh, okay.
Costco.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if that's funded or not.
On the RTC list. But I don't know what the funding is. I don't.
16.5 to the county in shared revenue is what the suggestion here is.
That's the net increase.
Yeah, for us. That doesn't include the capital list, which is right there, which doesn't include our projects right now.
It doesn't include anything for us.
Yeah, so.
Not very much money.
No, there's like 15 million. Well, this 8.7 billion is how much it is. It's a ton of money. But the three, now the biggest money is going to Puget Sound Gateway, 520 and 405, and then 16. North South. And yeah, we get nothing. It's not good.
This is dark.
West Vancouver Freight Access gets 1.9 million. I mean, like, you know, it's something like that. Or 100. I always forget. Anyway.
Yeah, you know.
We got work to do.
We have funds. You know, we got hammered pretty bad by the article that the sheriff responded to in the Columbian.
Yeah.
Did he mention the 1.2 million he is getting for his new radio system?
Oh. Yeah. I think that was in there.
And that wasn't enough for him, though.
No.
Well, there's the Cressa radio update that's going on, and you guys took the vote, obviously, the 911 tax and that stuff. Then there's also this other project that's been requested for the records replacement.
Yeah, that's specifically for the sheriff. Yeah,
and they'll be coming back to us with, I mean, the idea would be, and what we talked about with them is, you know, like you were talking about overtime savings. Like, you know, if you hired someone, would you be able to not have to spend that overtime?
$400,000 under current budget.
So how many people could you hire? Exactly. So they're going to come back with that, you know, like using that money for a position. One piece of it.
Yeah.
And so using things like that, using the risk, you know, because they were saying, well, we're getting all these claims because the people are, well, okay, is there a dollar amount that you can specifically, that we could take out of that risk reserve?
Was that in the article? I didn't. Who wrote the article?
He did. Eric did.
Did you come and talk to any of us about what we did, what they got? Same on you.
On that one?
People came up and testified and beat us up on something, and it's like getting one half of the story. And
Well, he had in there, he did have in there, it was definitely, he had in there what we said during the work session, you know, about that we're going to work with him, and that, you know, and he may have talked with me actually afterwards, where I said, obviously public safety is our number one priority, we're going to be looking at ways short-term and long-term to help. It was in there. It's just there was a bunch on the sheriff not being happy.
There's the lowest crime rate per officer in the state.
Oh, this is in thousands.
Yeah.
Yeah, it took me a...
Yeah, this is billions at the bottom. It
took me a little bit to figure
with
that
a B.
out.
With
yeah. Like, wait a second, this doesn't seem
where
like very much.
Where did this come from?
That's from the Central Majority Coalition.
Yeah, we just got sent that today.
That was in the email.
Okay. Yeah, it forwarded to you. Okay.
All right, what else you got?
A couple of things. You guys, I guess, requested, and I mean, I've been here last week, but you wanted Jennifer to start routing electronically to liquor license requests or applications
before
so you can have
she
input.
Sends in the thing to the state.
And yes. I think that's great. But we're just kind of having a question now on the back end because we want to be respectful and careful about the Open Public Meetings Act. And so instead of Commissioner Medora on the email right. saying, oh, I think this one's, you know, bad for this reason or we need to consider this, and then you agreeing, how do you want to handle it? Do you want to do it? Do you want to make your comments back to her?
All we do
one-on-one, or do you want me to put it on the? I could put if we have one like the Johnson license request. I could put it on board time and just say any comments.
I think
on
you're
it.
Overthinking.
Okay.
In the files that we get now, they get routed to us. Like lots of times, we write comments on it. Like we're, I mean, I have folders here.
Yeah, but we're doing these electronically now.
No. But what I'm saying is they get routed. I sign off on it, but I put a comment saying, yeah, I'm opposed to this. And then it gets routed to Commissioner Medora. He sees what I said, and then he'll put something, and then he'll put something. It's still getting routed that way.
On those there, you get your own. There's something else. Yeah, there's something else that I passed from my desk. I thought it would save time. I walked in and gave it to you or David, and she comes back and says, what are you doing passing this off? And she made me go back and do it over.
But whatever, just make sure that we're straight with it.
And this isn't new. This is a constant struggle with any three-member board for sure. But she asked a question, and I said I would ask you that, you know, I could, like I said, if there's Johnson's liquor license application, I could put it on board time, and you could give us any comments at that point. If you don't want to go that complicated, just need to be careful that we're not making any decisions or agreeing with each other on email. That's all.
I have a process question on that since I see those coming in.
Of course.
So now that they're coming by email, mm-hmm. So the idea here is that you don't want... are you making the point that the commissioner should not see the other person's comments?
Yeah, just don't reply all.
Actually, well, yeah, if you can stay away from reply all, that's good. There's nothing illegal about them seeing what one another said. It's just if there's an agreement or, you know, anything like that.
Because currently now it's just going back to Jennifer.
Which is fine.
That's fine.
In other words, just reply to Jennifer, and that way it's completely independent. So we don't do reply all, we just reply.
Right.
Yeah, you're not responsible to one another.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
Cool.
Kelly left me his notes on freeholder update. So
by the way, wait, just to finish that off, if we do see something in the process that we feel like, oh, that should go to board time, then we can just simply say that, and then it can schedule board time.
Sure.
Yeah, maybe if one you think's got significant issues.
Yeah.
Significant
comment.
The only thing we need to make sure of is if you have issues on it, and this is for all of us, that we got to do it like early promptly because we have a 20-day window within which we have to make comment, and so if we're going to bring it to the next week's board time, we got to make sure we get it on there.
It's kind of strange. Before, it was already back in Olympia.
Yeah.
Before we authorized it or had comment.
It is interesting. We are seeing more. I mean, you know, it's noticeable.
I think you're renewable. That must be
maybe
renewable because that's what most of them are existing.
Okay. That could be. It's interesting. I've had arguments with Carol Levin and back and forth
drinkers
over the past day. Well, she made the case. She's like, you know, she's going back and forth with me, and she's saying, okay. Well, Carol Levin, she was talking about how, well, what if they were growing, you know, what if they were growing poppies? Would you support them then? And I'm like, well, no, it's elite. I mean, that's opium. I mean, no, of course I'm not going to support any illegal activity. So, of course, there's a line within which, you know, you have the reasonable right and use to your property.
so long as it doesn't infringe upon others. And, oh, by the way, so that you're not doing illegal activities on it. But I don't know. It's an interesting thing because she's a property rights advocate, an activist in the rural areas. But she's also very, you know.
And you got her right between the eyes.
No. She's very much against drinking, and so it's a really interesting conundrum for her as far as trying to really work this through. But anyway.
So Kelly left me his notes on where we're at with the freeholder election, and so he said it looks like Ann Rivers is the chair apparent of the freeholders.
Oh, she went up.
Randy,
about like 40 votes. Really, it's interesting.
Randy Mueller
is when he gets the chair
for the first meeting. They do the first meeting, and then the freeholders elect their own chair at that meeting.
It looks like there may be a recount required for Randy Mueller because he's within 40 votes.
Wow.
Kelly spoke with Ann. She said the first meeting is going to be November 26th,
and that's set up here for CBTV.
That was what we wanted.
It doesn't say that on here, but that would be my assumption. Swearing in at 6:30, the meeting begins. They're going to try to schedule the second and fourth Tuesday evenings of every month, except for the legislative session, February and March.
What do you want our rule to be on this? As far as I mean, it's super interesting, and this is an amazingly interesting process for me. You know, that to see this and see this group, who is really a prestigious group, get together and really be talking about county government. Again, you know, it would be really interesting to be listening in and seeing all of this. But I also don't want us to be unduly influencing the process because they're advising the citizens on this, but they are by statute free of us. You know, we are not to be involved. We couldn't run for freehold or those kinds of things. I mean, are we? You know, I kind of want to go to some of the meetings, but then I also feel like, well, I don't want to be there and like be somehow influencing things or have people have them ask me questions or come up.
I would think that they would probably have appointments with our administrator and several of the electeds and us, but that's their option. I think it would be their ability to have insight.
Agreed. I agree with that. But they're public meeting. I mean, the public can go and sit in on them.
I don't plan to attend, but I think it's a good idea.
I plan on attending, and I plan on speaking as a citizen.
Well, you're free, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
I couldn't be any more uninfluential than those other
people. Fair enough.
Just get your farmer.
That's it. You've got our farmer here.
Farmer.
All right.
So I would give CBTV a heads up ahead of time so they can establish where they're going to put this information.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll work that up.
And make sure Ann knows about it.
Yeah.
I would expect our staff to really give good guidance in the first couple of meetings, and then maybe back off and have maybe one staff member there, I don't know if it should be Kelly or who, that would share back with us if they need any other assistance, if they want legal assistance or something like that.
We have a PA assigned to it. Daryl Walker from the PA's office is the one that Tony assigned to this.
Yeah. And I don't think they necessarily have to be there all the time.
I wouldn't call it guidance. I would think that they're going to say what they want when they get
support.
Started.
Support. Introduction, because it's new. The majority of them have no idea what they can do, what they can't do, or anything else.
Kelly is writing a manual, too.
Yeah, which will help.
Oh.
What?
That got a reaction.
Well, Kelly tends to use 100 words when 10 to do.
Well, the manual is to provide full information. It's not to actually be a presentation to them. Well, and I hope that Carolyn Long,
like,
was awesome in kind of talking things through with that. That hope somebody's talking with her to see if she might be available to support them as well.
Because
she was great.
Taylor.
I think she'd be a really good resource as well. Carolyn, Dr. Long works at WGU Vancouver, who came in and talked with us about freeholder
and
charter.
Simplify it, not. Sometimes
she was good at that, I thought. Anyway, they'll ask for what support they need.
Complicate things instead of. Sometimes you're better to say these are things you can do instead of saying these are things you can't do.
With some legislators already part of this, they're going to figure that out up front. If anything, they're going to want to say, we'll call you, don't call us.
You're assuming those legislators know what they're doing.
You said it, man. I didn't say it.
I'm talking to you.
I figured I had a right to say that.
You've earned it. All right.
I'm good.
That's it? Okay. Mary, do you have any?
Yes. On a positive note, recently the Columbian did a very nice public service by featuring people who are taking advantage of our free leaf disposal coupons.
Oh, yeah.
And not only are they taking advantage of it, but they're having family fun at the same time. Yeah, they featured families making a day of it, cleaning up.
Yeah, I made a day of it this last weekend, and I didn't have family fun.
They
spent the whole time trying to keep my kid out of the street and like and having to rake up leaves.
No, don't get any leaves in the street.
I'm serious. People were enjoying themselves.
That's cool.
Hauling their leaves and dumping them for free,
yep.
courtesy of the county and the city. And that's also consistent with what you were saying earlier.
About the marketing and working to the majority as opposed to the fringe.
Yes.
Freeloaders.
Very nice.
Taxpayers. Come on now. All right. That is cool. That's great. Thank you for that. All right. Anything else? Did you have anything else? No? All right. We're good. Thanks.
All right.